Good morning. My name is Lisa New. I teach American literature in the English department at Harvard, and I'm currently teaching a course called Poetry in America, where we've just read Robert Frost, and he's on my mind. And in fact, a few weeks before, I taught Frost in a different context in a course on James's and Jamesians. Frost, of course, came to Harvard in order to study with William James, and many of his poems seem to bear James's imprint. In any case, the poet I'm thinking about is After Apple Picking. It's one to which I always return when teaching Frost, whether in 3 or 4 days or in just one, as was the case last week. And I return to it because it has so many of Frost's characteristic gestures as well as themes in it. I love it and am moved by its setting, an apple orchard, which with only a few minutes prompting, I'm able to elicit from students why the apple orchard would be significant for Frost. They figure out pretty quickly that to set a poem in an apple orchard is to set it in the topos, in the site of the fall. And having identified that as its setting, students are in a good position to consider just what manner of reflection this poem and Frost's other poems offer on what it means to work, what it means to live in nature, and by extension in time, what, in many of Frost's poems, although not in this one, what it means to live in a world where the creatures are divided into the male and the female species, what it means to live in a world where our language seems always to be slipping off the world or eroding off the world where words do not quite hold. The apple orchard in this poem is also a setting for one of Frost's most moving themes, and I like to just think of this as Frost's burnout theme. The way the world finds us, and he borrows this from Emerson as well as I think from Milton, the way the world finds us too soon, tired, weary of considerations, as he puts it in Birches, or overtired, as he puts it here, without sap, without juice, and in fact, worn out and burnout from the work, or as he puts it here, the great harvest I myself desired. So to come more specifically to the poem After Apple Picking, it's set in an orchard, and its speaker, who describes himself as perched on a ladder, halfway up this ladder, with the ladder still poking through a tree, the poem finds the speaker describing his state of mind. He, what is it, complains or just acknowledges that there's a barrel that I didn't fill beside it, that is beside the ladder, and there may be 2 or 3 apples I didn't pick upon some bough, but I am done with apple picking now. The rhymes in the poem are reliable and ready to hand. and yet they end the lines with a consummate sort of gentleness and gracefulness. They're almost they're not hidden, but they're the gentlest sort of musical endings offered to at the end of each line. The poem's form always puzzles me a bit, and I haven't figured it out yet, since it wavers, or it's much more irregular than Frost usually is. While he'll return us to iambic pentameter lines with a rhyme on the last foot, sometimes the lines will narrow or slim precipitously into a four-beat line, like "Toward Heaven Still," or "But I Was Well," or "And I Could Tell," or "The Rumbling Sound," or "That Struck the Earth." And there's a kind of rhyming of this four-beat line through the poem in a kind of irregular, ragged, perhaps unconscious or half-conscious, or it's as though consciousness itself swells and narrows. The poet's vision broadens and then lapses, and that, of course, describes as well his condition. One of the most beautiful parts of the poem, and the part that I always make sure to talk about with students, is the strange contrivance he describes about a third of the way down, when he reports that the scent of apples overpowers him and says, "I am drowsing off." So, introducing a theme of sleep, which may or may not be related to death, in the poem. And he then writes this: "I cannot rub the strangeness from my sight. I got from looking through a pane of glass I skimmed this morning from the drinking trough and held against the world of hoary grass. It melted, and I let it fall and break." And that strangely contrived act of skimming a pane of glass, or really a pane of ice, from the drinking trough and looking through it, looking into his own consciousness by means of this disk of cold or ice or perhaps mortal futurity, strangeness of having skimmed this pane of ice from the drinking trough. These strangenesses make one wonder what this pane of ice is. It seems to me, and has seemed over the years to students, to be, and to critics before them, of course, has seemed an image of the lens, the disc, the magnifying, that magnifying glass of art itself benefits, and this is an old thought, but Frost sits comfortably inside old thoughts, that benefits from its mortal, transient quality. That is, the lens of art that we hold for only so long knowingly brings to us, conveys to us a world riper, fuller, more dimensional for our consciousness that it will not last. And so this disk of ice that the poet holds before the world, and he says this, the speaker says this, but I was well upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. The extraordinary fullness and saturated color of that image suggests in the middle of this poem the way in which the middle of this poem, where the lens of art is in some way most still, suggests how through this lens of mortality or this sense of the impending cold, the world becomes fresher and brighter. There's one more thing about the poem that I thought about last week and have been thinking about in the last few days, and that's how I don't understand, and will probably have to keep reading for several more years before I understand the last lines of the poem about some weird woodchuck. These lines go as in this way. One can see what will trouble this sleep of mine, whatever sleep it is. Were he not gone, the woodchuck could say whether it's like his long sleep, as I described its coming on, or just some human sleep. There are so many strange, fanciful, obviously implausible assertions in those last lines. That one, whoever one is, can see what would trouble the sleep of the poet. That the woodchuck could say whether the poet's sleep is like his own. That the poet has described the woodchuck's sleep coming on, as he has not, at least in this poem. And what I love about these lines is the way they point me to so many other lines in other poems of Frost's like them. Lines such as we find in his poem The Woodpile, where the speaker engages in a long colloquy with a bird. He suggests is playing a kind of hide-and-go-seek with him, when of course the bird is unlikely to be doing any such thing. Or as he says in his speaker will assert in spring pools that he really wishes the trees would stop drinking up all the water that create these, the water that when standing in pools reflects the sky almost without defect. And he says of the trees, let them think twice before, as the speaker goes on, before they drink up all these watery flowers and flowery waters. And there's something so interesting, although I don't understand it, about the projected wishful, fanciful, pantheistic projections, pathetically fallacious projections that Frost offers in poems, when he draws natural phenomena into a kind of conversation with him. I did look up this morning in preparation for this this spell of taping, woodchucks' hibernation cycles, and it turns out that woodchucks do hibernate pretty early, in around October, so the human apple picker is still at work after the woodchuck has gone into his burrow, and I guess the woodchuck may know a thing or two about sleeping that that the poet does not, although of course the woodchuck's long sleep is different, really different than any human sleep. In any case, I haven't solved any of my questions about the woodchuck or this poem, but I've thought further into them than I had before, and I've bookmarked for myself how I'll think further still next time I look at the poem. I wanted to say finally, though, in closing, that these lines also have a wonderfully vague quality. That wonderfully vague quality that Frost doesn't just permit, but installs in his poems. To go back, one can see what will trouble this sleep of mine, whatever sleep it is. Whatever sleep it is. Those seem, in a way, wasteful words in a poem that's in many other ways so scrupulously attentive to metrical regularity, scrupulously traditional in its topos of the apple orchard, and the weird blurriness of that phrase, whatever sleep it is, a blurriness so characteristic of Frost, who will say famously, something there is that doesn't love a wall. What a crazy way to begin a poem, with something there is. You'd think if you were going to start a poem, you'd have an idea what it was. But Frost instead, or to give another example, Frost in For Once Then Something, Frost seems to insist on the, and in this he's a Jamesian, on the philosophical saliency of moments of unclarity, on our puzzlement, and this puzzlement as it as in breaking into articulacy and speech, has to move through something that's pre-linguistic, or at least pre-syntactic, or has with no particular precision of diction. And part of what I love so much in Frost is the limpidness of his verse and of his vision, as it's nevertheless set within obscurity and vagueness. And it's this obscurity and vagueness that I'm happy to find in the last lines of this poem, lines I could read again. The woodchuck could say whether it's like his long sleep as I described its coming on, or just some human sleep.